This is the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast. Here are your hosts, Justin Jarrett and Wes Kerr.
Hey, Loco Sports fans, joined now by Mr. BJ Payne, the head coach of the football team at Hilton Head High School, and of course, the coach of Jalen Snead, who has been the man of the hour, the man of the week, after signing with Notre Dame and making it official on Wednesday. And BJ, I know you just have to be beaming with pride this week to finally seeing this thing through to the end. It's been a long process, and you started telling us a couple of years ago that Jalen was going to be the most recruited athlete in Hilton Head High history, and sure enough, here we are. He's a member of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, and I know you have to be feeling pretty excited about it.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's a tremendous player. he's a great student, great kid, you know, does everything the right way. You know, he really hit another gear in the past year, and even now, you know, with the way he's training right now to get ready to for the Under Armour All-American game and to report to Notre Dame. He starts classes January 10th. So, yeah, I think, Justin, I think I've said your name more times in the last month than I probably had my entire life, because I always tell people, I'm like, you know, we have a reporter that, you know, Jalen's freshman year after the season, you know, his name's Justin Jarrett. And I remember telling Justin, you know, this kid's going to be the biggest recruit of any sport that Beaufort County's ever had. And I remember that his freshman year. And like you said, it was a long process. I mean, truly, it was a four-year process. So I'm very excited for him, very excited for his mom, for the journey he's about to embark on.
Take me back to his freshman year, what you told him when he came in, and how impressed you were about how he has grown as a football player from that time to now be named Mr. Football and going on to Notre Dame?
Well, you know, he was a kid that, you know, we watched growing up in our youth program and at the middle school. And he was just, you know, I always tell people he was different. Like, when he hit, it sounded different. You know, when he was in a fifth grade, sixth grade, fourth grade. And it wasn't like he was that kid that was supposed to have a stripe on his helmet, you know, and he was looked like he was 17 and playing with 11-year-olds. He just, everything he did was so impactful, so physical. And, you know, that carried on through middle school, and he was a free safety and quarterback. And he came in his freshman year for us and was, you know, a free safety and a quarterback at JV. And then around week four, week five, we had an injury occur to one of our starters on defense. And it was a no-brainer move for us to take him and bring him up to varsity and move him positions. And, you know, he never looked back. And, you know, he played strong safety, outside backer for us that year. And then, obviously, his sophomore year, played the same position opposite of Cole DiMarzo. And then last year we did something unique with him and put him at defensive end, which ended up, and Jalen and I talk about this all the time, that was really the thing that he was a great player, but us making that transition with him made him a complete football player. It really taught him how to work with his hands, play with violent hands and use leverage. And then obviously this year we kind of played him everywhere because we kind of had to hide him as best we could, so the teams couldn't scheme and run away from him, because we played a number of teams who would just line up, see where he's at on the field, and then just check opposite of him. Luckily for us, he was athletic enough to chase things down from behind. But yeah, he's had an interesting career for us, and he's kind of been all over the place for us. But he's never – the one thing that I want to make sure that people know is, you know, this kid played five different positions on defense, on offense. He was our regular quarterback, our wildcat quarterback. He played running back for us. Sophomore year, we put him at receiver. Never one time did he complain. I mean, you're talking a top 40 player in the country, a five-star kid who his junior year, we said, we're moving you to defensive end because it's the best thing for our team. And never once did he question it. He never once said, man, nah, that's not for me. I'm a linebacker. Never once did he question anything. He just, you know, he just said, yes, sir, and went and played. And in today's day and age and today's athlete, I mean, that's a pretty special thing.
Well, and the same thing happened this year with, you know, you moved him around, as you mentioned, on defense, but then you had an injury and he needed to step in and play quarterback. It was, you know, the best situation for the team. And again, I would guess that he didn't question that. And he went out and he gave everything he had on offense to the point that you sometimes had to rest him on defense because he was given so much on offense, taking so many hits and carrying the ball so much. So, I mean, that just really speaks to the unselfishness and the team first mentality, right?
Well, you know, without a doubt, you know, he was our Wildcat guy and we were getting him some reps at running back at that juncture, whenever he got hurt or whenever our quarterback got hurt. And, you know, he had to step in and, you know, if you ask Jalen though, you know, his whole life, he was a quarterback, right? So he thinks he's a five-star quarterback, but he's not, you know, he arm punts and throws hand grenades. But the good thing is he can, you know, he can spin it well enough to keep people honest. But yeah, he never said anything. And the same thing, you know, we had to give him reps on defense or rest on defense and take away some of his reps there. Never one time did he say, you know, hey, look, my future is on defense. I need to be playing defense only. You know, he did what was for the team, and he's the ultimate competitor. That's the one thing about that kid is if it's competition based, he's going to do everything he can, not only to win, but to bury you. And, you know, so when he gets in a live setting like that, and you know, it reflected because, you know, and basically played 8.5 games, he had 101 tackles. Imagine if that kid would have been fresh. You know, like the first week, I think that we did it. He had 22 tackles and like 140 yards rushing against Wade Hampton, something like that. Pretty ridiculous numbers. But, you know, that's the one thing is, you know, it gets to the Mr. Football and everybody's talking about, you know, this kid or that kid with their stats. And I think they forget that this kid played every single down of every single game. He never came off the field. And he also played every special team. And if I took him off of kickoff, he would complain about it. I'm like, hey, you need a blow. And he's like, not on kickoff. So that's, you know, it's a pretty special thing.
That's a great point. Just an absolute warrior out there on the field. Tell me about the work that he put in off the field in training and lifting and workouts. And then also just watching film. How did all that really empower him to become the player that he is now?
Well, the off the field piece for him, actually myself and Coach Brown, Shane Brown, our basketball coach, you know, we had a talk with him, you know, a year and a half ago, right before, like 2 years ago, I guess, right before all the COVID stuff happened. And we talked about what he needed to do to separate himself and put himself into an elite category. And, you know, part of that was he really needed to work on his hips and his overall footwork. You know, he was an athletic freak. He could run, jump, do all those things, strong as a bull. But he was more of a, you know, his first couple of years here, he was a bull in a china shop. And, you know, we jokingly talk about, you know, his nickname Nuke, and he blows things up and stuff like that. But the reason, Justin, you can appreciate this, unless you guys are both baseball guys, is the reason why I originally gave him the nickname Nuke was because of the movie Bull Durham.
Yeah.
So, you know, Nuke LaLoosh, Eddie LaLoosh in that movie, you know, he's wild and all over the place. And then, you know, but he's got so much talent. And when he figures it out, you know, he comes up to the majors. And so that's where that nickname stemmed from. Now, when COVID hit, you know, we had told him things that he needed to work on. And not just as a football player or basketball player, but just as a general athlete. And, you know, we had that situation with COVID and everybody's, you know, learning from home. And, you know, he ordered ladders, cones, everything he could to set up his own thing at home. And every day for 4 hours, you know, he was training 3 times a day just on footwork. And then when that really showed was, you know, last spring when he went to camps, because the one thing, you know, people would say, oh, he does this, but, you know, can he cover? So when he went to these combines and just shut everybody down, the top receivers in the country, top slots, top running backs, you know, but that was something that he worked on, he mastered. And, you know, you tell kids all the time, like, you know, you can be a great athlete and go here. But the guys that go to the elite level, that go to the top, they're guys that do things on their own, not just what we do within our own strength program and our own speed program. But guys that go over and beyond and do the unique individual things, you know, to make them better. And that's what he did. You know, he took the bull by the horns and, you know, decided that he wanted, you know, to 100% be the absolute best, you know, and he set goals. And, you know, we sat down and his, he had, you know, individual goals that were being Mr. Football, that were playing in the Under Armour game. And, you know, he was fortunate enough to reach those goals.
Yeah, you've had a terrific track record here over the years of sending guys off to great fits for them, whether it's, you know, lower levels or at the Division I level. And I think some people would probably even say getting some guys over-recruited almost, you know, like you've been able to place them at places that people didn't think they would be able to get to. What is the key to that? I know you've made it a priority that, you know, that's going to be kind of a hallmark of your coaching, is you're going to get guys placed at the next level. But how do you go about doing that? How have you created the network that you need to be able to make that happen?
Well, I think it's a number of things. I think it's some things that I do. I think it's things that we do as a staff. I think it's obviously things that our kids do. You know, in Notre Dame's recruiting press conference afterwards, somebody had asked Marcus Freeman about his relationship with me. And, you know, he talked about that, you know, how it goes back 15, 20 years. But, you know, he said that, you know, when BJ Payne calls me and tells me he's got a guy, I know he's got a guy. And this is what I tell people all the time is I don't have magic pixie dust in my pocket. Right. Like, I don't pull it out and sprinkle it and offers appear. But what has happened, I think, is through my years and 16 years as a head coach in Ohio and in here, is that there's been a trust earned to where if I call a college staff or if I call a college coordinator or head coach and say, hey, I got a guy, he's a dude, he can play for you, that it doesn't mean they're going to offer him, but it means that they're going to watch that film. They're going to watch that kid. And that comes from a number of different things. I think it's from our relentless pursuit of getting kids recruited, from taking them to combines, taking them to camps, which is very unselfish from my personal family because it takes a lot of time away from them. But they see the bigger picture. So we get these kids out. We get them to different regions. You know, they're going to naturally get recruited here by ACC and SEC schools. But we get them to camps in the Midwest. We get them to camps in the Northeast. And now all of a sudden, our kids are truly getting recruited nationally. Then, you know, like I said, our staff does a great job from sending our kids from academics to giving extra time. And then the third piece is the kid themselves, is that, you know, I always say that we run our program like a college program. Like, we have mandatory study tables. We have mandatory training tables where we feed them and things like that. So what our kids do is they're used to that environment. They're used to that setting. So when our kids go to college, there's not a big transition. You know, a lot of our guys, when they go, they're really, really good college football players at their universities, and they're playing early because there's no adjustment. They're used to having study tables. They're used to having, you know, three times a week, they got to sit down for an hour and do their work. Where some kids who don't have that in our high school program, they're not used to that. And so they get to the next level, and it's a total different thing for them. But that's it. You know, at the end of the day, it's still in the colleges to get them recruited. And like I said, we've earned that trust. And I'm brutally honest with our players. I'm brutally honest with our parents and with college coaches. If a kid's not a guy, I'm going to tell them. And that's happened before. And it's happened here. To where a kid thinks he's at this level, but he's really not. He's here, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being a 1AA guy, a Division II guy, or Division III guy. There is a major difference in being a great high school football player and being a college recruit or a college prospect. And like I said, I think we've earned that respect from coaches to where, you know, if we call and say, you know, hey, we got a guy, then they're going to take a look at our kid. And it, like I said, it doesn't mean they're going to offer him, but somebody's going to put eyes on that film, and that kid is going to get evaluated.
I mean, I think it had a lot to do with the success of Puna Ford, even back to Michael Julian as well. Tell me about how those early players on your first few teams really helped lay the foundation for what we're seeing now, sending a bunch of quality talent off to the next level.
Well, I tell our kids all the time is, you know, they have to be thankful for the group ahead of them because that's the way it all starts, right? So when I got here, Michael Julian was going into his senior year. So I get down here, I see a 6'4", 190-pound quarterback that can make every throw and is uber athletic. So I got here, we got Michael's stuff out, which was kind of funny because Michael Julian's film that I created for him off of his junior year, the first three passes he threw on there were drops. And, you know, he's hitting receivers and stride and they're dropping the ball. And he came to me and said, "Coach, you messed up my highlight tape. The first three tapes or the first three clips are people dropping the ball." And I said, "Michael, they're not recruiting the receivers. They're recruiting you." And so Michael really picked up the steam and ended up with, you know, 20 offers. He got a lot of really big offers late, but he stayed with Toledo. Well, what happened was the schools are coming in to see Michael Julian. And then it's, who's that guy? That's Puna Ford. Who's that guy? That's Khalil Lewis. Okay. Now the next year they're recruiting those guys. Who's that guy? That's Justin Morrow. Who's that guy? That's Tyler Hamilton. Who's that guy? That's Bryce Singleton. Who's that guy? Aaron Frazier. So that's the way it works really is it's all, you know, the stem, like Jalen, all, you know, so much of his early steam because of everybody that was here to see Cole DeMarzo and to see Christian Miller. So they see, you know, they come to see those guys, but then they see other guys. And, you know, I think that's it. You know, the biggest piece is, you know, it goes from year to year, you know, and like next year we'll have Chris Marable who will be in the same situation recruiting wise, not to the extent of Jalen, but, you know, a lot of his foundation is being built off of, you know, Jalen's success. So it just kind of, it piggybacks on top of each other. And, you know, it keeps college coaches coming through our doors and at our spring practices and, you know, during a normal non-COVID situation, you know, we have 50 to 60 college coaches that come to watch our spring practices and evaluate our kids.
That's terrific. I mean, you're absolutely right. It's kind of one of those things that once you get the ball rolling, it kind of opens up a pipeline a little bit, gets you on the map. And so who are the next guys? I mean, you mentioned Marable, but who are some of the other guys who may get a little bump off of folks watching Jalen's film this year?
I think a big one right now is Chris Marable. You know, he's a pretty elite interior defensive lineman. You know, first team all region kid, 6'4", 285, uber athletic. The biggest thing for him is he's an interior defensive lineman and getting him to understand it's okay to be double teamed and triple teamed because, you know, kids in high school, they just want to make plays. But getting him to understand that college coaches, when they watch your film, they want to see how you can take on a double team because you're not going to make every play at the college level. So Chris is one guy for sure. And then we have a bunch of younger guys. I think the unique thing about us now is we're kind of, you know, getting into, you know, that the next couple of years where, you know, we might not have over athletic, uber athletic kids, but we have so many great kids. And so it's going to be a little bit of a different look for us, I think, in the next year or two. As opposed to, you know, what it's been in the past where, you know, we're going to have a lot of, you know, really, really good high school football players and great kids and all of that. But as far as recruiting, obviously, you know, Chris Marable, Braylon Kitty is kind of, you know, stroked the fire a little bit his freshman year, which he's got to bring back this year for his junior year. But those are a couple of guys that just pop off the top of my head right now.
Really exciting future for this Hilton High program. Let's talk about Puna. What a year he is having for the Seattle Seahawks. Just coming off his best game of the season against Houston. 6 tackles, 1 for loss, 3 solo stops. Tell me about how impressed you are of what Puna has done this year. And I really think Seattle's in a position where they can still make a run here in the NFC and make some noise down the stretch.
Yeah, you know, they got 2 tough games left. They got the Rams this weekend, and then they got the Cardinals to finish the season and a couple games in between that they should win. You know, I was looking yesterday and the day before, I guess the Rams got like 16 guys on the COVID list. So, you know, if they hold out another week, maybe that'd be a good thing for them. But yeah, they're a scary team that if they get in the playoffs, they can do some things. But they got some key guys out for the season, Chris Carson, Jamal Adams. But yeah, he's had a phenomenal year. You know, they switched his position this year. He went from nose guard to three tech. He hasn't played three tech since high school. So it's been a little bit of a learning curve, because usually when you go out to three tech, you're getting single blocked by just guards. Well, Puna seems to be one of the only guys that has moved to a three tech and he's still getting double teamed. So, you know, he gets treated, you know, with the same respect as, you know, Aaron Donald's the best in the NFL. But on a different level, he gets kind of treated the same. There's about five interior defensive linemen that get treated that way. In regards to blocking schemes, and he's one of them. But he's on a pace to set a career high for tackles. It seems like it's been a little bit of a quiet year for him. And then obviously, you know, next year is going to be a huge year for him. About 3 weeks ago, we started talking about where he's going to train this offseason, because it's going to be, you know, next season, you know, is going to be such a big year for him. It's going to be a contract year. He just signed a 2-year deal before this year. So he'll be going to contract year. So where he trains at this offseason is going to be ridiculously important. And he knows that. And, you know, we're getting that figured out. But, yeah, he continues to grind. It's a great thing to watch. I actually, for the first game that I've missed in like 2 or 3 years was this past Sunday against Houston. We had a youth combine here at the school for little kids. And so I missed the game. So I told his dad and his agent, I said, of course, this is going to be the game. I bet he has a huge game because I miss it. And that's exactly what happened.
You've maintained a phenomenal relationship with him, almost like a father-son type relationship. Talk just a little bit about what he's meant to your family and to you personally.
Yeah, it's been extremely close. And it's not just a Puna thing. I'm close with, you know, so many of our players. You know, I talk to them, you know, all the time, you know, once every couple of weeks, at least some guys every day, like Puna, you know, Justin Morrow, still talk to all the time, Khalil Lewis. But yeah, we have a very unique relationship that was, you know, built on trust from the beginning, you know, when I got here, I moved his position and moved him from a linebacker to defensive line. And he trusted me, you know, again, kind of like Jalen, as far as being unselfish, he trusted me that it was the best decision for him. And, you know, throughout his high school career and then college career, we built that. And then, you know, his ties with my family, you know, he's very close with everybody in my family, from, you know, my dad to my children. You know, like when he surprised me 2 years ago and came back for a Friday night game that we had after his Thursday night game, had no clue he was going to be here. And, you know, it surprised me. It was sat with my, you know, family at the game. I still go by about once a month and see his grandma. Absolutely phenomenal lady. And, but yeah, we've kept that bond, all the way throughout. We probably talk or text every day or every other day. And it's not just, you know, about football, you know, it's about life. It's about everything else. So yeah, we've built an incredible relationship. And, you know, my daughter always says that Puna's my oldest daughter. So that's what she always, and it says my favorite daughter. And so it was funny because, you know, this year she started saying, you know, she was like, ooh, so does Puna have competition for your favorite daughter now? Is Jalen there? And then Jalen used to say, you're forgetting about Cole. So we have an incredible relationship, and it's really good. I mean, it's organic. It's, you know, it's a very unique relationship, and I'll never take that relationship for granted. He is like a member of our family.
Great stuff. Tying this back to Jalen, how has the relationship with Puna and Jalen Sneed, how has that really impacted Jalen's career, and what has he learned from watching Puna and hearing from Puna's experience?
You know, I think quite a bit. You know, they've spoke a couple times. As we all know, Puna isn't the biggest talker in the world. But you know, I reached out to Puna probably, you know, Jalen's sophomore, junior year and said, hey, you know, this kid's going to be pretty special. You know, if you can grab him whenever you get a chance and talk to him a little bit just about what he's going to go through. And, you know, I know that they talked for about 15, 20 minutes last year at Soar Fest, which is a Soar Day, Puna's big event he put on. And they just talked one-on-one. You know, I told them, I said, hey, I don't want to be a part of this. I just want you guys to talk. Like, Puna, tell him your experiences. Tell him what he's going to go through here. And so in a very quiet way, I think he's mentored him a little bit, but it hasn't been like a once a month thing, you know, anything like that. But when they get the opportunity to talk, they talk about it. And I know Puna's extremely proud of him. You know, everything that comes out with Jalen, you know, he retweets and puts back out there. And, you know, Puna's extremely, extremely, extremely proud of where he comes from. And, you know, everything you see him in pregame, he's always wearing stuff for South Carolina and for, you know, for the state of South Carolina and for Beaufort County and 843 and Hilton Head. And any success that we get from this area, he's extremely proud of. So, you know, he's done a tremendous job with trying to help Jalen in the quiet way that Puna Ford operates.
Yeah, he is definitely a man of few words still to this day, but we'll have to see.
Amazing,
if
we got
a big enough Loco Strong t-shirt for him to fit into. I'm not sure we have any that big, but talking about Jalen and moving him around this year, and I think that might have actually been beneficial to him, especially getting some time at safety, because it looks like Notre Dame likes him in that kind of hybrid linebacker safety role that is so important to their defense. Do you get the sense that that's what they're grooming him for?
Yeah, he'll be an overhang type guy, you know, whether he's at Rover or Will, an outside backer that can cover. And it was, you know, a lot of times, you know, we didn't use him as a true free safety. We might have lined him up at free safety, but we'd walk him down to 7 yards because we wanted to keep him in the box. But yeah, 100%, you know, moving him around, you know, really got him used to seeing a bunch of different things from coverage to blitzing. And that's what he is. You know, he has turned his coverage game to an elite level as well. But with that being said, you know, at the next level, he's going to be a, you know, drop him in zone every now and then type guy, but he's a pin his ears back and let him go type guy. So I know that's what their plans are for him. They're planning on him coming in January 10th and then, you know, having a great spring and being ready for next year. This isn't a, hey, you're walking into red shirt or we're hoping you're going to be ready in 2 or 3 years. They expect Jalen Snead to be ready to play and play early and often. So he's got some things he's got to do. He's got to continue to, you know, become a better football player. You know, he's got to, you know, learn everything within their defense. And he's got to put on a little bit of size, you know, which is going to come so natural for that kid because, you know, he just constantly burns it. And he's always done that. Like during basketball season, he's always lost 10 to 15 pounds. But, you know, we weighed him the other day. He's about 208. I know by next season, they want him at 220, 225, which I see him putting on 15, 20 pounds probably within his, like, first 6 to 8 weeks in Notre Dame. I think once he gets there, he gets on that eating schedule and that workout schedule. And you look at his frame, he's just naturally going to put it on. And I think it's going to be, you know, a really good thing for him. But he knows that, too. He knows that. You know, they're expecting him to come in and be electric and play early. So he's excited about that.
Cannot wait to see him in South Bend. Tell me about his relationship with Marcus Freeman over the years. I know the two met freshman year when he was at Cincinnati. Tell me about the bond that they have developed and what you're looking forward to seeing him alongside Marcus Freeman over at Notre Dame. Just a great experience how they bonded and now being able to play together over at an elite college football program.
Yeah, so, you know, his freshman year, right after the season, you know, I had called Marcus and said, you know, you got to check this kid out. And Marcus was like, where is he going to school? He thought he was a senior by watching his film. And then he, you know, when he found out he was a freshman and he was like 14 years old, Marcus was just blown away. So, you know, Marcus had offered him and Marcus said, look, you know, I'm going to offer this kid and build this relationship with this kid. And I, and not so much that, you know, because remember at the time that you're talking, Cincinnati wasn't a playoff team at this time, right? So this is 4 years ago. And, you know, they're just a really good team in the American Conference. And, you know, and Marcus said, you know, this kid's going to be an elite top 50 kid. You know, not so much that I'm recruiting him for Cincinnati, but I want to build a relationship for this kid because I want to recruit him for me because who knows where I'm going to be at in 4 years. And, you know, Marcus was foreshadowing, which makes him the elite recruiter that he is. And he built that relationship with Jalen throughout the years, over the course of 4 years. And then, you know, he gets to Notre Dame about a year ago now. It was last January. And Marcus and I, you know, have an extremely close relationship. And we talk all the time, you know, almost like every other day. But when we do, it's like 11 p.m. at night. It's 10 p.m. at night. It's when he's leaving the office and heading home. He called me like at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I said, you know, he calls me and he says, hey, what's up? And I was like, what do you want to know about Snead? And he said, oh, no, I'm not calling about Jalen at all. He was like, I'm just calling to see how you're doing. I'm like, no, you're not. And then he was like, well, I mean, maybe we're in the recruiting room. Maybe we just got done watching Jalen Snead's film. You know, maybe we're going to offer him here at Notre Dame. And then we had a big laugh about it. But then that's when they really, you know, built that bond. And I told, you know, the first Zoom meeting that they had, you know, with him and his mom, when they hung up on the Zoom, you know, I looked at his mom and I said, you know, I don't know if you'll fall in love with the University of Notre Dame, but I know that you'll fall in love with Marcus Freeman. And, you know, at that time, I personally had not seen Notre Dame's campus. Obviously, you know, Notre Dame, you know, it's a great academic school, but you don't know all the pieces that go to the puzzle. And as I learned that, I was, you know, pretty blown away. And I knew it was going to be, you know, for what the kid wanted and for what his mom wanted, I knew it was going to be a no-brainer. When him and I went up in April on an unofficial visit, you know, he said in April, he said, I'm done. This is where I want to be. I just need mom to see it. And he knew as soon as mom saw it, that it was going to be, she was going to, you know, stamp it and seal it. And, you know, it's a perfect situation for him. It's football wise, academically, it's phenomenal. Socially, it's great. There's only like 9,000 students at Notre Dame. So it's a great situation all the way around. For him. And I'm very excited that, you know, it was the school and the staff that he fell in love with, and he's able to have the opportunity to go play for them.
Yeah, no doubt. We talk all the time about we celebrate every signing, no matter where it is, whatever level, because, you know, every situation is different. There's so many factors that go into that decision that we don't know about, you know, if you're not intimately involved in those conversations. But who are some of the other guys that might get some late offers here that are trying to catch on somewhere, the other seniors that you have? I know that, you know, Matt Larkby had a really nice season for you, and he's trying to find some interest, and probably some other guys too. But who are some of the sleepers that are still out there that might get an opportunity?
Well, here's one thing about us. When I talk about how, you know, everything we do as a program and as coaches, I think one thing that we do a great job of, as well as preparing guys for the opportunity to play at the next level, is educating them on what the next level means, of them understanding that, you know, when you go to the next level, especially the Division I level, it's a full-time job. You know, it starts at 6 in the morning, it ends at 9 p.m., and that's every day. Your social life is wearing that jersey. You're not a typical, you know, student. You're not a typical, you know, you're not in a frat. You know, you're not going to frat parties. So I think that we do a phenomenal job of educating kids on that matter. And with that, you get the kids that really want to do it. And then you get some kids who go, hey, that's just not for me. I don't want to do it. You know, I just want to go be a student. I want to study on my academics. These are what my goals are, you know, for my career and 4 years from now, 8 years, 10 years from now. And it doesn't include football. So with that being said, like Ryan Clark, for example, Ryan Clark has decided he does not want to play college football. And he's a kid who has, you know, six Division I offers on the table right now. But it's just something that he just doesn't want to do it. And that's okay. You know, that's okay. Go be the best student you can be. You know, at the end of the day, it's not just about going and playing football. It's about going and getting that degree and then becoming a productive member of society and a great husband and a great father one day. And that's the big piece. So we have three guys. Matthew Larkby is a kid, for example, who doesn't want to play in college now. And we sit down with them and talk to them. But we have three guys that are still looking. Chase McCracken is one. Chase was, you know, obviously a little bit of a late bloomer, came to us his junior year. We had the COVID season, played linebacker, then had a breakout year running back this year. Problem with recruiting is it starts earlier and earlier and earlier. Like we're talking about Jalen as a freshman. So it's really hard for kids to have a great senior year and still get recruited. Right. But right now, Chase, South Carolina wants Chase really bad as a preferred walk-on. University of Louisville, same way. So right now, in a plethora of Division II schools. But I think he wants to go the PWO Division I route. So right now, you know, starting to narrow that down. Jaden Gilliam is another one. He's got PWOs to Mercer and to Wofford, and then a bunch of Division II schools as well. And then Amari Ford. So, Amari missed some time early for us this year and then came back and played the last three games. He's actually committed for lacrosse to Hampton, but he's still thinking about the possibility of playing football or playing both sports in college. So still working on that. So those are our three from the senior class that want to continue to play at the next level that we are, you know, working on, on a daily basis. Just got back from a recruiting fair in Myrtle Beach last weekend. I have to go to the national convention here in early January and, you know, get that networking done and build that relationship with those college coaches and get their information to them. A lot's changed with the recruiting because they have the early signing period, you know, December 15th. So you kind of got to wait for that wave to end and then see where the dust settles and then go. It's the last couple of years has become very crazy in college football between that and the NIL. It's pretty absurd right now.
And you
got a kid to pick Jackson State over Florida State because he got $1.5 million. Now, here's the argument, just to touch on that subject real quick. But I had this a member of our coaching staff is a huge Florida State school fan. And he said, how can he do that? He said, that would be like Jalen picking Charleston Southern. This is a knock on Charleston Southern. But I said, no, it's really not because Jackson State probably beats Florida State right now.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the kid got $1.5 million. You know, I don't think Charleston Southern's beaten Notre Dame. So, but with the NIL, I mean, the kid got $1.5 million to make that decision. I mean, it's a lot of money for a 17-year-old kid.
Sure is. It absolutely is.
More money.
And you also have some guys playing in the next level right now. When you look at Colton Marzo at Michigan State, Sam Suma starting his career at UCLA, and Gaston Moore now at Tennessee. Just give an update on a couple of former Seahawks stars now in the college ranks.
Yeah, those guys are doing great. So, Sam went out to UCLA, ended up the season at third on the depth chart. And they had seven or eight tight ends. Their starter graduates this year. So it looks like it's going to be between Sam and, you know, one or two other guys to really have a chance in the spring. Gaston transferred to Tennessee, was one of eight quarterbacks when he got there and ended up winning the number three spot and actually, you know, played in a game earlier this year, went 2 for 2. So Gaston has gone over and beyond. You know, we always knew that Gaston had elite arm strength and ability, and he's getting the opportunity to do that. Cole, obviously at Michigan State, was on special teams this year. He had some injuries early in the year that really banged him up. He had a hamstring when he came back from the hamstring, had an ankle injury. And, you know, you guys know Cole, so his injuries must have been, you know, pretty significant because Cole DeMarzo does not sit out anything. So those guys are doing great. And then, you know, like Harvey King for us, you know, was at Savannah State. And he's actually graduated hitting the portal. and he's got a, you know, three or four Division I schools that really like him. Harvey's a big kid who's uber athletic, tremendous in pass pro. You know, went to Savannah State, signed with them when they were 1AA, and then transitioned to Division II. He was able to stay on scholarship. Most importantly, got his degree. And that's the one thing when you look at our guys that have gone, you know, they all get their degrees and plus. Like Michael Julian left Toledo with his master's. Tyler Hamilton's working on his second master's. You know, Jerome Maddox the same way. Jeremiah Maddox the same way. So these guys go, they perform on the field, but then they also get their degrees and they usually get a graduate degree to go with it, all for free.
Yeah, that's the end game, right? Is to right. Get that education for free or at least at a discounted rate is absolutely end game. And I love what you talked about you know, educating the kids and just making sure that they're really committed to it and they understand what they're getting themselves into. Because you do hear a lot of kids who kind of get burned out a little bit and they decide to go ahead and give it a shot. And after one season, they realize their heart's just not in it anymore. So I love what you do there. And I also love seeing what you've been doing with Jamie and Risher over at Wade Hampton and really putting his name out there and trying to use that cred that you have. As when I say he's a dude, and you're telling people this guy's a dude. And I completely agree. And I co-sign almost every one of those tweets to make sure people know, because that guy, man, we got some diamonds in the rough down here in the low country.
Yeah, he's a ball player now. He's a dude. And, you know, I talked to his coach before the game when we played them, and I said, you know, what does he have going on? And he had told me, you know, not a ton of interest. And, you know, then obviously I got a chance to watch the kid live. And, you know, he's very Jalen Snead-ish. You know what I mean?
Yes, like, he is.
A lot of similarities there. Now, I think when it comes down to true, like, testing numbers, there's a major difference there. And I think that might be part of it. I think Rish, maybe, you know, I think he's like a 4.8 guy, 4.9 guy, which is what I was told. But when it comes to just like playing ball, he's a dude. And he's got all the check marks. He's long. He's a big kid. You know, like I'm in pregame looking like back and forth, like at him and Jalen. They almost look identical physically.
Carbon copies.
Yeah, it's crazy. And he's another kid, never came off the field, right? Like,
yeah,
they attached the wagon to him and said, you're our guy. But I know his coach Hannah has been sending his stuff out, you know, trying to get him. But it's that thing again where, you know, it's where recruiting has gone. And, you know, when you really have that senior year where you're that guy, you're the dude, it's really hard now. And, you know, Rish has gone through some things where, you know, he played receiver. And then this year they just, you know, said, he's not a quarterback at the next level. And I think that's part of what college coaches are trying to figure out. Like, what is he? And I just saw this morning or last night, you know, he got an offer from Coffeyville, which is a community college, which is like a JUCO. And from all accounts, what I've been told, he's really good academically. But that might be something that's like an option for him, to where, you know, you're a qualifier and you go to a JUCO or a community college. You don't have to go there for 2 years. You can go there just for 1 year. So he can go, you know, do that for a year, ball out, and then go get more offers. And so that might be an option for him. But I think he's a tremendous kid. Very respectful, but as a player, like, that dude can play. And on top of that, like I said earlier, there's a difference between a great high school football player and a college prospect. But I think he meets both. I really do, because I think he hits the check marks. I've never put a stopwatch on him on a 40 or anything like that. But, you know, I mean, just watching him play, he's good.
He passes the eye test for sure.
Yeah. You know, he's a dude. I mean, he is a, you know, almost a throwback type kid. I mean, he's a ball player. He wants the ball in his hands.
Absolutely. And we talk all the time about putting the local on the map. And I think we certainly did it this season. When you look at Jalen Snead being the first player from the low country to win Mr. Football, and then what Buford High did, making it all the way to the 4A state championship game, just reflect on this football season and how the Locos showed out really in all phases with Snead's success, with Buford Success and a bunch of really talented players who put together some outstanding showings this fall.
Well, I think as a whole, you know, we have really over the last, you know, I've been here 10 years now. So for the last 10 years, I think collectively as a whole, everybody has done a great job of you know, putting local on the map, and especially with football. There's not a lot of respect from the upstate, you know, or, you know, whatever they consider upstate here. It changes all the time. But, you know, this area specifically doesn't get a lot of respect when it comes to football. So I think, you know, from a number of things, from, you know, us getting some guys recruited, and then, you know, we had a couple years there that we had a couple great runs and did some things. And then, you know, you take into account what Bluffton did, you know, in, you know, what was that, early 2010, you know, going to state Final Four. And then you couple that with, you know, the runs that Mate Rivers had, which have been fantastic. And, you know, their blue collar approach and how they do things and how physical they are. And then Ahmad Green becoming a finalist for Mr. Football. And then you take into account what, you know, Bryce has done at Buford. I think collectively as a whole, you know, and not to mention what Christian Academy's done, what Thomas Hayward's done. I think collectively we've done that. And I think that one thing that gets lost a lot of times is there are some programs, some schools to where in this area, there's no love lost, right? There's rivalries there. There's, you know, there's staffs that always don't get along and teams that always don't get along. But I think there's a respect there. And I think there's a respect there that, you know, maybe doesn't always come out in public, but it's a pride thing of getting the attention to this area. I think some people were blown away last year because somebody wrote an article about teams still left in the low country in the playoffs. And I'm like, you left out May River. Look at what they've done. You know what I mean? And I think collectively, and Whale Branch, shoot, look what Jerry's done for Whale Branch. And, you know, I think that in the last 10 years, it's really been a great thing for this area on what everybody's been able to do from on the field to off the field. And everybody has the things that you know, they're good at. But I think as a whole, it really puts a lot of eyes from the state, from media, from across the country in recruiting to our area, which is huge. And I tell kids all the time, the same as I talked about, it goes in kind of generational for recruiting. It's the same thing. You know, when there's a Jalen Snead at Hilton Head, college coaches are coming here, but they're going to other schools as well. You know, when there's the big tackle from Whale Branch, if they're going to see him, they're coming to us as well. DJ Aiken, the same thing. Ahmad Green, the same thing. So if they're there, they're going to hit the other schools in the area. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the success on the field and off the field for the area has been tremendous. And I don't think we'll all sit around a campfire eating s'mores together, but I think that there's a respect by each other for what everybody's done in their own realm.
All right, maybe we got to put together the Loco Sports Coaches S'mores Forum or something and get everybody around the fire to eat s'mores together. But no, absolutely.
Do it January 7th to the 11th. I'm out of town.
Well, we would like to see you eat some s'mores, Mr. Payne.
It looks like I've ate quite a few s'mores in my life.
Had your share. No, a rising tide definitely lifts all boats, and we definitely believe that. And we're happy to be a small part of it and help shine a light on the guys around here. And we appreciate everything you do for the local kids and appreciate your time today sitting down with us and chatting a little bit.
Thank you for having me. Thank you guys again for everything you guys have done. You guys have really done you know, as much as the coaches, you guys have really taken the bull by the horns. And I truly mean that, Justin. It's not just, you know, me saying that. Like, you have put an emphasis on bringing attention to this area. And I think without a doubt, it has done nothing but help our kids and help our program. So in case nobody has given you a thank you for that.
We do hear it, but we never tire of hearing it either. So we appreciate the kind words. And
Wes, always, I mean, my goodness, this guy, Wes covers like 50 games a week. It's absolutely
amazing. Wes is a tremendous workhorse, high motor, high energy guy. You know, he's going to give you everything he's got on every play.
He's the Puna Ford of journalists.
Yeah.
Like, he just shows up and grinds and does everything he needs to do. But, you know, does it, you know, he's still quiet. I've known Wes for, you know, obviously years. But he's the Puna Ford of journalists. So I think you should put that like in your Twitter. I think you should put like in your bio, the Puna Ford of journalists.
The Puna thank Ford you, of journalists. I love
thank,
that.
Thank you, Coach.
You're welcome, buddy.
This podcast is made possible in part by these sponsors. Hey, Loco sports fans, you know we're all about keeping it local, and that goes for pizza night, too. When you've got a craving for the best pie in town or the best-kept secret, their amazing mac and cheese, keep it local with Local Pie. They have two locations, on the Promenade in Bluffton and on New Orleans Road on Hilton Head Island, where they serve up incredible wood-fired pizza featuring regional-sourced ingredients, and their mac and cheese is the best-kept secret in town. And they're committed to giving back to the community and protecting the environment. So when it's time for takeout, keep it local with Local Pie, the official pizza sponsor of Loco Sports. Hey Loco Sports fans, does your business or organization need a new website or need help drawing more visitors to an existing site? DDS Web Design can make it happen. From simple HTML pages to get businesses online, to complex site designs with maximum functionality, DDS has services suited to every budget. And they love working with small businesses and entrepreneurs. They also build year-round maintenance into every package, so your website is always up to date. Check them out at ddswebdesign.com or call 843-931-8668 and tell them Loco sent you. Hey Loco sports fans, are you looking to promote your business or organization? You can do it right here with a sponsorship of the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast, the Loco Hoops Report, or the Loco Pigskin Podcast. Rates start at a very affordable $50 a week to advertise your event, organization, or business, and reach a loyal, local audience that supports grassroots local sports journalism. Send us an email at locosports@gmail.com today to get started. Go Loco!